B-Pod Studios.
Straightforward.
You lose too, big boy.
No holds barred.
I'm starting to think this guy's a con man.
Sports talk.
I got it. All right, I got it.
Felger and Maz, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
We talk about attrition during the playoffs and that teams like the St. Louis Blues almost rely on it. If you go, harken back to San Jose, they ran San Jose into the golfing season. I mean, it was, and we're looking at the same thing again. Guys have been dropping here because they chip pucks in, they skate with this great intensity, and they finish off with from some ferocity. So, and that plan is paying dividends.
Story on the NBC broadcast on something Maz talked about even before the series began. The war of attrition. It concerns you.
I mean, I don't think it's just something they almost rely on. I think they do rely on it. That's the only part I would say that Milbury would disagree with. It's not almost. They do rely on it. They're looking to knock you out. And I just think the more this goes on, the more beat up you get. And it's human nature to just say, I'm done. I'm done taking a beating.
Do you think it's dirty? Do you think that they are... that there's something wrong with their strategy?
Or no.
Amoral?
This is how hockey used to be played. So
not at all. No, it's just rare in this day and age. But the Bruins won a cup this way in 2011, or pretty damn near close to it. I think they had more skill than this Blues team has. But that's all this is. This is them saying, we're bigger and stronger than you, and we're going to keep hitting you until you don't want to get hit anymore. That's really all the strategy is. And they, you know, again, so they're crashing the boards in the offensive zone. The defensemen are pinching. They come up and they hit you when you get the puck. It's just hit. Whatever you do, hit somebody. And, like, I just think the Bruins, and my only hope here, and I say hope because I think the deeper the series goes, the harder it gets for the Bruins. And so my only hope here is that the Bruins go into some of these games saying, the veteran guys, you know, we're up 2-1. I'm not going to take as many shots tonight because I need it for game 5. And whether it's deliberate or not, but you know, maybe it's subconscious or you know, whatever. But that's my only hope.
That's a risky game to play.
It is, no question about it, Murray. But I just think that the Blues are bigger and they're stronger. And I don't know how you fix that. That's what worries me. And now you're losing defensemen. So, I just, game 5 is going to tell us a lot. You know, we'll see what the Bruins look like in the early part of that game. But let's go back to game 1 and not forget. I'm not saying the Blues played well that night. They were up 2-0. Like, you know, in a lot of ways, you could look at this series and say, I mean, I think it's where it should be. It's even. But I think you go back to game 1 and say, if the Blues had held on and won that game, we'd be looking at this and going, oh, boy. I mean, the physicality worries me.
Well, to me, the thing that, just look at the 5-on-5 play. When they're 5-on-5, the Blues have outscored you 8-6, and they've outshot you and outchanced you. So unless you've been on special teams, they've been the better team. And that's it. So, it's no stretch to say that the Blues have matched you or bettered you when the game's straight up. When someone's off the ice, okay, so you have better special teams. And so, which is the part that I hate. So now it depends on who's reffing the game or how they're reffing the game. You know, the first 3 games of the series, the Blues were called for 5, 5, and then 7 penalties. Last night, they were whistled for 3.
And one of them was a matching at the end.
And one was one doesn't even count.
It's right. It was 2. And one of them was a delay of game, which Parayko flipped into the crowd. And the other one was a high stick. So there was no trip called. You know, there was no hooking called. There was none of that. They were all no-brainers.
So you had to play 5-on-5, and, well, that's what happened. And, I want to say, unless that changes, you're not going to win. But, you know, I could say by the same token, if the Blues continue to go... What are they on the power play this series?
Oh, my God, it's brutal.
I think it's 1 for...
12, maybe?
Yeah, 1 for 13, 1 for 14, 1 for 12, something in that range.
I think the Bruins have killed 36 of the last 38 power plays.
Okay, but that does include the Blues.
Right.
So, like, you know, so on the other hand, I could say if the Blues aren't better than 1 for whatever, 13 on the power play, they ain't going to win either. So, I mean, I could say the same thing to them in that regard.
Except the Bruins did win a cup that way.
But now we're going back to, but what would I rather be? I'd rather be a 5-on-5 team.
No question. I would too. I mean, the majority of the game is going to be played 5-on-5.
Because I think this whole series, last night was a little better, but this whole series, I think they've been calling too much ticky-tack crap. And that plays to the Bruins' advantage, but I don't like it. I don't like it. And I like a 5-on-5 series. I just do.
Was there anything egregious in terms of penalties that you think they missed last night?
Because I hate talking about the refs. No, I think there was egregious calls on what shouldn't have been calls. But now, you know, teams, they're buying it. But, you know, you need it. But I think the farther you go in the series, the less likely they are to call it. Like Game 7, generally, are they going to pull the same crap in Game 7 with these little ticky-tack calls? No, they're not.
No shot.
So you're going to have to win a 5-on-5 game eventually. Let's just put it to you like that. So that, to me, is the big thing for the Bruins, 5-on-5. James in California, lead us off this hour.
Hello, I just want to say how big of a missed opportunity this was last night. I also think the series is over as well. That showing was absolutely just pathetic last night. No effort whatsoever in their biggest game in years.
Okay, so I don't know how you get that second thing when really the whole series has been each team responding. You know, not
push-pull.
Yeah, there's been no sort of this is a turning point in the series and now it's going in this direction. It's been push-pull, exactly right mess, exactly. So that's been the trend of the series, which means it sets up for the Bruins in Game 5.
Yeah, except that the closer you get to the end, now both teams get desperate, right? Because you just have less margin for error. So, you know, I just think that it becomes, again, a battle of 5-on-5 and will. And one of the things I'm worried about is that the Blues have a stronger will than you do.
So I don't know how you gather that. The Blues have good will. There's no doubt about it. I think you're really strong in that regard, too. Let's see how that plays out. The thing about missed opportunity, the caller said, I don't view it that way. They were never in a position to win that game. They were never in command of that game. If they had a lead, then you say, okay, it's right there for the taking. But the best they were was tied, and when they were tied, they were still getting outplayed. So I don't really view it that way. Bill in Rhode Island, what do you got, Billy?
Hey, another network right now is re-showing the 2011 Stanley Cup playoffs, and Pierre McGuire at the beginning of Game 4 on the ice interviewed Sean Thornton, and they asked him, how do you guys get back in your game? And he said, you know, we get the puck deep, we go in hard, we forecheck, and that's what we're used to looking at when we're watching Bruins hockey. Right now, we're basically the Canucks from 2011, and it sucks to have to root for a team like that. We're just not used to it. I mean, you look at Backes last night, and he was in the crease. I think Pietrangelo had his head around his arm around his neck, and he was yanking him out of the crease. Where's the help? Where's the other guys jumping in? I mean, what's going on here? This is just too soft. And we're just basically giving it up for St. Louis.
Okay, Bill. I mean, what you're saying is kind of right, but they've evolved. The whole league's evolved. I'm not as bent out of shape about that. I don't want to be the 2011 Bruins. I don't want to be that. I don't think that wins anymore, although St. Louis is doing it. So, but I mean, what can I tell you? I have no problem with the Bruins going with the speed and skill and that sort of team. None whatsoever. I think it's been the right move and the right direction. It sure as hell a more entertaining product, and I think it wins at just the same level as the physicality does. So, I just don't agree with you on that. What I think they need to do a better job of is taking the hits. And that's where they didn't engage in puck battles because I think they didn't want to get hit last night.
But don't you think that speaks to will?
Yes, but I don't think this is a team that lacks will.
But they did last night.
They did last night.
Yeah, they did last. So to me, that's what, like, you don't want to get hit anymore? That's a question of will.
Well, you know, I mean, let me see them do that in a game they need.
Okay, so that's fair. Again, like, you know, there's been that push-pull element to this.
Was there a little piece in the back of their head that said, we came here for a split, we got our split, and I'm not going to get my brains beat out when we already took care of business?
Maybe.
I mean, I think...
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, but that makes no sense, because if you want to avoid the beating, you want this thing over as quickly as possible. So why would you kind of half-ass it and shy away?
But it's easy to say, and then you have, you know...
Human nature gets in the way.
Headhunter bearing down on you in the corner, and you say, no, you know what, not tonight.
Yeah, human nature gets in the way.
Won our game.
Yeah, right. And again, like, the other thing is, you know, how many games in are we now? You know, it's 4-10, it's like 20 something games, right? They're sitting there going, this isn't game 4, this is game like 22. I'm getting my, you know, not that every game's been the same, but the schedule's been a grind. These guys have taken a beating. These games are played at a ridiculous pace. So they look at it and say, I need the night off. I'm gonna, you know, we don't need this one tonight.
And it's so, and it's not as dramatic as Maz is making it sound. It's not like they laid down, but it's just degrees. You know, if the Blues are going 1,000%, you went 970 because you're up and you didn't need it. And so there's just little degrees. And I think that's what you saw last night. If I see it, Maz, start to build, and then I'll say, okay, St. Louis's physicality is taking over. I don't know if it is because they won a game they had to have and the Bruins didn't need it. Let me see that, you know, happen in a spot where they both need it equally, or, you know, whatever, where it's not in this push-pull scenario. Let me see that then.
Sure.
Because I'm not sure it happened. But last night, the Bruins were absolutely alligator-arming some pucks out
there. Yeah, no, listen, I allow for that. I'm telling you, and you're right to say that it's degrees. It's absolutely degrees. It's not, you know, it's hyperbole when I say, you know, we don't need this game, and it makes it sound like they shut it down completely, and they didn't. But I just think that you play a team like that, man, it wears you out.
Let's see. Let's see if they're getting worn out. Pete in Rosendale. Go ahead, Pete.
Hey, guys. I don't know if it's just me, but I feel like Clifton has taken a stupid penalty every single game this series. And I'm sure I'm exaggerating. But I just think, you know, before last night, he was your fifth defenseman, and he's taking these really dumb penalties. And he's turning the puck over left and right. I mean, someone just needs to remind him to play like Connor Clifton and not try to be Krug and not try to be Chara.
Okay, so he did take another penalty last night. That was Tarasenko. He baited the ref, and he won. It was a dive. That also happened to be at the end of that massive, insane shift that the Blues had in the second period, where Clifton was out there for 3:06 himself. 3:06.
It was ridiculous.
He was out there. That was... So if you want to say they lost an opportunity, I thought that there was... That whole sequence there is where I thought you had a chance to steal the thing. It's a 2-1 game. They're up 2-1. The Blues are up 2-1. And they had just that, if you watch it, you know what I'm talking about, just this massive zone possession shift in the second period where Amonte said that the Blues got three full line changes with the puck still in your zone. They were able to swap out three full lines three times, once each, in that one possession where they were just all over you and you couldn't clear the zone. And at the end of it, Clifton took the penalty. They go on the power play. And you scored. And then you killed off the penalty and went into the second intermission tied 2-2. And I said, ooh, that's got to be a gut punch for the Blues to dominate like that in that sequence specifically, to be that dominant in that one sequence, then get the power play, give up the goal, lose the lead, and have nothing to show for it. Not just have nothing to show for it, but actually have coughed up the lead. That could leave a mark. And it didn't. So the Blues have a lot of those same qualities that you have, frankly.
Absolutely. They're relentless. They are. They're relentless. Now, look, again, can they sustain it? I don't know. You raise a good point. I mean, it's hard to play that way every night. You know, but that, I think it went from like 9 minutes to 6 minutes where the puck never got over center ice. A couple of times it went over the blue line. They came right back in. But it never got over center ice. And I don't know that I've ever seen that.
And you gained the lead in that sequence. You gained the lead. And I thought that was it. That was it right there. And it wasn't, because this Blues team won't go away. In case you didn't notice that quite yet. Unfortunately, we're talking too much about the officiating. Bruce Cassidy had an interesting comment on that. You'll hear it right after these words.
This is Felger and Mass
on 98.5,
the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
I just don't know what to say anymore.
Wrong, sorry.
It's Felger and Maz.
They could use a good ass kicking.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Just what do you think of the officiating last night? Do you think your counterparts talking about it had any effect on the fact you didn't get any calls?
Well, I found it interesting, and I I fully expect. I mean, they got the best refs. They go through the process like teams do, right? They get evaluated, and they're here because they've been the best throughout. So I would expect that they wouldn't get baited into somebody's comments. They should be better than that if they did. I certainly didn't expect them to. They should have a degree of professionalism, call the calls they see. That's why the night before, I found it odd. I mean, we killed five power plays. We scored on our four. One was in the last minute, so it's inconsequential. One was on them that they got called for. So it wasn't an infraction. They got called for a bench minor for a a challenge of an offside. So really, there's a couple that they could look at that affected the game. I think one in the first period, one in the second. So I think it was a bit of a ruse. And like I said, hopefully they didn't get caught up. And going into last night, the call on Clifton was a head scratcher. Tarasenko went to reverse hit him, and I don't think there was any contact to the head at all, other than his own head, maybe him leading with it. So I don't know where that call came from. That's the only one I was unhappy with. There's always some that let go, Steve, either way, that they could call. So it's hard to nitpick through everyone. So that's my thought on that. At the end of the day, we didn't play well enough to win. We know that. We killed the penalties that we were called on and scored on a shorthanded goal. So none of them really cost us at the end of the day. We would like to get on the power play a few more times. So that's going to be the onus going to be on us to work for the calls in game five. Simple as that.
Well, that's Cassidy's response, saying he hopes the referees do not get baited by Craig Berube. They're better than that. Not sure if they did or they didn't. Probably didn't hurt Berube saying what he did between games 3 and 4. I just know, you know, there have been two different ref crews. Sutherland and Kazari and Rooney and Dwyer. And Rooney's familiar to Bruins fans. He's from Southie. Bruins fans love hate. Some Bruins fans think because Chris Rooney is from South Boston, he overcompensates for being a hometown boy and, you know, makes calls against the Bruins. That's what Bruins fans think. And so Rooney's always been a problematic guy for some Bruins fans. He's in the Stanley Cup final, and it looks like they're just going back and forth between these two pairs. Kazari and Sutherland, Rooney and Dwyer. Kazari and Sutherland are known as refs that call it tight and call a lot of calls. They called 7 combined penalties in game 1 and then 15 combined penalties in game 2. Rooney and Dreyer have gotten games 2 and 4. So, and the penalties there were much less. 7 in game 2, 7 last night. So, it's been just adding them up in my head, which is always dangerous. Rooney Dreyer's games have had 14 combined penalties. Sutherland and Kazari, their combined games have had 22 combined penalties. Different games with different ref crews there.
So the good news is that if they're alternating, you get them 4 times. You get your guys 4 times.
If they do that. I don't know if they do it like that, but if it continues to go like that every other game, you are 2-0 with Sutherland and Kazari. You're 0-2 with Rooney and Dreyer, which, again, the Rooney thing with Bruins fans is not a newsflash. They have a thing. From what I understand, a thing about it. I've never been able to pick up anything when I watch the games that he refs. I don't notice. I can't tell the difference. Is he after you? Is he not after you? Is he trying to even it out? Is he trying to... Whatever. I don't notice it. I just know some Bruins fans have a thing about that.
Yeah, I mean, again, I come back to the whole thing of if they don't call penalties and you need penalties to win, then you're not as good as you think you are.
So that's sort of what I was driving at yesterday. That if you are dependent on special teams, it's all part of the game now. But... if I could only pick one or the other, I'd rather be a 5-on-5 team than a special teams team. All I do know is this, that 15 penalties as Sutherland and Kazari called in game 3, I don't want that in the Stanley Cup final.
Too many.
As a consumer, that's not the brand of hockey that I like. The Bruins win, I'll take it, like, fine. You know, that's not the brand of hockey, I'd rather the Bruins win. I'm not going to play that game. I'm just telling you, I prefer less calls. And I think that even last night, there were a few too many. Taking the cheese on these guys going down too early and too easily. And it was really the Blues doing it more than the Bruins last night. And I just, I'm not into that.
Yeah, and again, because even the number last night is even deceiving because you had 2 high sticks and a delay of game.
And I thought the high sticks were weak, by the way. I thought the high sticks were weak calls.
But those are automatic, right?
Well,
if that's how they view it, it's automatic.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's not like they were calling trips and hooks and elbows and boarding and cross-checking. They weren't calling any of those. Like, you know, and it's only going to get rougher from here, so the Bruins are going to figure out what they want to do.
Cassidy's frustration is, though, after Berube bitched, it was after Game 3 when the Bruins were called for 8 penalties and the Blues were called for 7. And again, one of the 7 on St. Louis was a failed challenge, which isn't even really a referee call. It's a rule. So the Bruins actually had more calls against them than the other way around, and that's when Berube chose to open his mouth. That's what's probably frustrating to the Bruins. And, you know, well, we executed on special teams. You didn't. That's not our fault. That's not the ref's fault. That's your fault. So I understand all that. But that's what happens when you are a team that's dependent on officiating, when you are dependent on power plays. It sort of becomes part of the story, too much of the story, which I don't love. But is what it is. We'll see what that is going forward. Back to your calls. Victor in the car on Zdeno Chara. Yes, Victor.
Yeah, I got a problem with your comments on Chara with his mask sitting at the end of the bench. And seriously, you should know why the guy was there. It's because he wants it to go out there and inspire his team. You know, guys that don't want to go in the corner and, you know, hit and get hit, you know, can look down the end of the bench and say, hey, this guy should be in the hospital. This guy should be getting his jaw wired. This guy should be, you know, having his chiclets replaced. And he's got the guts to come here and sit down and try to inspire his team. So, and that's really the only reason the guy was there.
Do you think it worked, Victor?
I can't believe that you don't understand that.
Do you think it worked?
I don't know if it worked.
How'd they play in the third period, Victor?
It didn't work because they didn't score.
Victor, they shied away from contact in the third period worse than they had all night. It didn't work.
The third period was a disaster. I'll answer for him. Like, if he can't answer that question, it didn't work. So, and I don't think I don't think at any point, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but I don't think you ever said that you didn't understand why he was out there.
I mean, I understand his motivation. I also don't know how much guts it takes to sit there. It takes guts to play through that. But what guts?
Yeah, but it's not a question of guts, right?
The caller said he was going to inspire his teammates with all the guts that he showed by sitting on the bench.
Oh, I just looked at it as I didn't even hear that part of it. Because, you know, to me, it was a question of...
Oh, I looked at it as guts. You kidding me? I still would be on the ice right now screaming like a banshee, getting that guy right to the mouth.
You have to take us out of it. Us, yes, we'd be squealing like children for months. I'd be traumatized. Hockey players routinely come back from shots to the face and the mouth, providing you're not concussed or have a broken jaw or anything, which Char very, very well may have. But if he was trying to impart his guts to his teammates by sitting there, it didn't work. Because his teammates weren't inspired. They played very uninspired in the third period.
Okay, so, but again, and then I would say that, did it hurt them to have him there?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think it did. I think it was a non-factor, is what I think it was. Like, I look at it and say, now, again, you're talking about the
offense. I mean, how could it hurt? But it did, just watching it, you know, made it look even worse, like he got the bag beat out of you.
What I took out of it is he sat there but didn't get in the game. He doesn't have a cut mouth. This isn't about oral surgery.
Of course.
It's got to be something way worse.
Of course.
So that's what I took out of it. My question is, can you play with a broken jaw, if that's what it is? Can he play with it? Can you wire him shut? Can he do it?
I think this Dunn kid had been out with a broken jaw, and he just came back 3 weeks or whatever. No, you cannot. If you have a broken jaw, you're done. See you later. Smell you later. It's over.
Yeah, he was out since game 3 of the Western Conference Finals.
Right, so that's it. And maybe he came back ahead of schedule. Who knows? Broken jaw, non-starter. See you later. See you later. We continue with your thoughts. Big Bruins Day, of course. Here's an update from Murray. Want to do a quick Bruins breather, though? Maz has a problem with Tom Brady. Maz has a problem with Brady.
What is it this time?
Well, let's find out. Let's find out what Maz's problem is.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
I hate jokes. We're not taking jokes.
That joke's blue.
It's Felger and Mass, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
All right, Mass, what's your problem with Tom Brady?
So there was a story today that came out of New York concerning something Boomer Esiason said on WFAN, and I had missed this. Brady is trying to patent the term Tom Terrific. He's applied to patent it.
Yep, trademark it.
Trademark it. Presumably, I'm guessing, to sell it.
Of course.
I mean, why else would you want Tom Terrific? So the people in New York are going out of their minds. And I was just trying to grab the audio, but naturally I don't have enough time to do it because I'm a jackass and an idiot.
It's okay.
But that's another story for another day.
Boomer Esiason said,
go ahead,
about Tom Brady. When you have so much GD money, you can do whatever you want. And this is now what Tom Brady wants to take? Tom Terrific as a nickname? I'm disgusted, and I'm really surprised, and I don't know. It just feels sleazy to me, you know? So there was more, but basically that was it.
So that's Boomer Esiason, right? That's Boomer Esiason. I mean, a guy, again, who probably has as much respect for Brady as anybody. So I sort of started thinking about it this way. Why does Brady need to do this? And again, so this is going to strike a nerve with Patriots fans because they'll defend everything Brady does. But Tom Terrific, I mean, you tell me if I say Tom Terrific, who do you say?
Tom Seaver, but because I'm old. But even a young person, who calls Tom Brady Tom Terrific?
Nobody. Nobody calls him Tom Terrific. Nobody calls him Tom Terrific at all. I've never called him Tom Terrific. Murray, you're like the biggest Brady fan on the planet, have you?
No, I'm not going to start.
Okay. Which doesn't surprise me. But again, Boomer's point is here. So in the interest of disclosure, Boomer Esiason is a huge Tom Seaver fan, apparently. Gigantic. And Seaver, I think, has Alzheimer's. He's in really bad shape. But Tom Seaver is, in a lot of ways, an American sports icon. I mean, up until a number of years ago, just a few years ago, I think Seaver had the highest approval rating of any player in history for the Hall of Fame. Like, he's enormous. Tom Seaver's gigantic. The Mets, this miracle Mets, the whole nine yards, everything was about Seaver and New York. So Seaver is, in a lot of ways, like, you know, and again, maybe this is a baseball thing on some level, an institution. Like, Seaver's a big deal. Brady trying to trademark the term Tom Terrific to huge Seaver fans is an insult. So my question to Brady is, why did you need to do this? What was the impetus to do it?
Do you think he knew?
I don't know if he did or he didn't. But if he didn't, then his people need to be called on the carpet for him by him, because I think he looks like a jackass. You got Seaver is an icon. He's huge, and maybe not to the 25-year-old sports fan who doesn't give a rat's ass who Tom Seaver is. But we're talking Tom Brady, who already wears TB12 hats everywhere he goes. And is already peddling to us the whole TB12 method and the $50 nut bag and the coffee table book and the whole nine yards. He is selling us crap down our throats, which, again, fine. All the power to him. He's got to have this one, too.
Yeah, get that money. I got no problem with it. And all those things you said about Tom Seaver, true. Won the world championship with the 69 Mets. You had 50 years to trademark the name. You didn't? You're a bad businessman.
Yeah, I just don't understand why Brady even has to go there. Who calls him the name? Who calls him Tom Terrific?
Time to start.
I've never heard it.
When did this become a part of, like, who he is? I don't know. I think stuff like this, again, take me out of it, Murray. Boomer Esiason's pretty respected guy in the football world.
Yeah.
I think this hurts Brady. I do. I think people look at him and go, "You really? You're going to do this? You're going to do that? That's really where you're going to go?
You need every last crumb."
Right, exactly right.
Yeah, that's
every
the American way. If anything, I look at this as a motivating factor for me. Because now I'm going to maybe go out there and try to trademark Big Jim so all the other lesser Big Jims can't have it. And if I've already missed out, shame on me. Just like shame on Tom Seaver, who had 50 years to do so.
I just think Brady comes across on stuff like this as completely being out of touch and tone deaf.
He is. He's unrelatable as ever, and he gets more by the day off the field. But fine. It's not like he's burning down orphanages.
Yeah, I'm not saying he is burning down orphanages. Although, I guess he is using some charity money for his kids' elementary school, but that's another story for another day. I mean, we've already told that one. So, yeah, I don't know. I look at it and say, who's making that decision? Like, is there somebody there where to say to him, Tom, do we really want to do that? Do we need that? We got TB12. We got Alex Guerrero. We're feeding people concussion water already. Like, what else do we have to get, Tom? How much more do we have to get?
Touchdown, Tom.
You've already got a house in how many places?
I like it, Jim.
How much more do you need? Really, how much more? I don't know. The fact that it bugged Boomer, I admit, triggered it to bug me. Like, I thought about it. I said, well, that's Boomer. Boomer feeling that way. And I think Boomer's pretty well respected in the NFL.
Man, he never won crap.
And so, like, I don't know. I just think, again, I just think it shows how unrelatable Brady really has become. That he's got to go for that. Tom Terrific? When have you ever called him Tom Terrific? You're so full of crap.
6-4, 2019. Tom Terrific.
That's today, exactly. Starting today. 6-4-19. Oh, God. I think it's such a bad look for Brady. I really do. I think it's a bad, bad look.
Do you think it's possible Brady never even knew about it?
Sure. Yeah, entirely. In which case, I would say...
And I have no clue. I'm just, like, I don't know, do all their trademark requests go through him?
I have no idea, but again, if I were him, I would say, guys, can you run this kind of stuff by me?
Or but
I mean, it is my name.
So while, I mean, if I were Brady, I wouldn't do it. I mean, from a pure capitalistic standpoint, if you are going for every crumb on the table, Murray, and I think you've, I guess you're in favor of that, it, you know, every last dollar, you're going to lose a lot of Mets fans. Mets fans buy shoes, too. Mets fans go to health clubs, too.
Well, I don't know.
Mets fans want to buy them. You know what, Murray? You're, bad example. Mets fans buy hoodies, too, don't they? I mean, whatever. True. I mean, you know what I mean.
Double maybe XL that, hoodies.
Maybe that was the logic behind the decision, but they're not going to TB12 anyway, so what's the difference?
Everyone's a potential customer. And if you're watching the simulcast, I'm sorry. I am looking up at the monitor. I'm about to watch the bad line change that led to the game-winning goal last night. I want to see it because this pissed me off. I'm sorry. This pissed me off. You can't run off all five guys unless the puck goes all the way into the other zone, and it doesn't. It just gets to the opposing, not even the opposing blue line, and you all ran off?
It barely crossed center ice.
What are you doing? That was a bad line change. I mean, just ill-timed.
Horrendous, right? And literally, like, they all start going to the bench.
Tie game, 9 minutes left?
And the puck barely crossed center ice.
Good God. Yeah, I mean, you know, you weren't the better team last night. You probably deserve to lose, quote-unquote, you know, if, like, you're going by who the better team was. But you had a chance to steal that one. That was a bad line change. I'm still more bugged by that than the Tom Terrific thing.
Of course.
But anyway.
As am I.
But anyway, I'm sorry. That was meant to be a Bruins breather, and I went right back to it. But the goal just came up.
I just think Brady does himself more harm than good with this kind of stuff. And I don't even mean in terms of the dollars and what's coming in and who you're alienating. I mean in terms of the whole image. Like, there are a certain amount of people in the football world, Brady is revered as well as he should be. And Boomer Esiason is looking at this saying, really? You had to do this? Like, that's a John Calipari move. That's refuse to lose. That's a Calipari two-bit move. That's what that is. And for a guy who's married to, like, the wealthiest woman on the planet or one of them.
I want to see if Pistol Pete has actually been trademarked because I'm going to buy that right now.
See if Sleeves has been taken, Murray. Say, get on this. Long commercial-free segment is next.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and...
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Something?
I don't know. Google it, Maz.
Listen to the podcast on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app.
That's idiotic.
Now back to Felger and Maz on Boston's home for sports.
McAvoy to his partner Chara. Left wing feed. Heinen brings it in. The Bruins are changing. Heinen protects. Bumped, but it stays in. Chara, left circle. Shoots. Finnington the save. Rebound. They score! Zdeno Chara's point shot. Went off of Binnington, he left some loose change, and Charlie Coyle hammers it home. Bruins 1, Blues 1.
Once again, the most consistent offensive player and the most consistent offensive line produces last night. That's Charlie Coyle and the Bruins' second line. Heinen pissed me off. That was a problem. The Coyle line was on for one bad goal against. Okay, so the Coyle line scored a goal and was on for three against, but one of those that they were on for against was the bad line change. So they were the line that was coming on the ice, and it's hard for me to blame that group when the St. Louis is already in the zone by the time you're coming over the boards.
Right, they were chasing, yeah.
So you were put in a bad spot by the timing of that change. So I really don't blame those guys coming over the boards because they weren't ready. And then they were on the ice for the empty net goal. So I really sort of take those two off the board. The goal that they gave up that pissed me off was Heinen's fault. It was after Coyle tied it. A couple minutes after Coyle tied it there in the first period. They have a nice little line rush going, and Danton Heinen gets loose with the puck up on top of the circles. And I guess Sammy Blais was coming in late off the bench off of his line change, and so he was sort of behind the play. But because of that, when Heinen lost the puck, Blaze had a step going the other way, and that led to that whole zone possession that led to the Tarasenko goal. It was just sort of a soft, soft play by Dotton Heinen.
Yeah, he was trying to set up Johansson for a one-timer, and it was there, right? And Parayko deflected the puck, and it went out and went the other way. So, like, I mean, that was a huge swing, that play. That was a huge swing.
You had gained momentum, you had a scoring chance, and it goes the other way, and now you're down 2-1.
See, that's why, like, at times in that game last night, and that was the point when the Bruins tied at 1-1, I thought, well, here you go, and it felt like they were starting to take the game a little bit. Like, it felt like it was starting to, you know, okay, now here you go, and I thought, wow, they got a shot of winning this game now. And then that play goes the other way. And, like, maddening. Absolutely maddening.
And then so the Blues took absolute control of the game in the second period with that one zone possession that was just epic. Yet somehow you not only survive it, you tie the game on a shorthanded goal, which was another huge potential turning point that never turned. That never turned. You came out in the third period and laid a wet fart. And who knows how that happens, but that happened. But anyway, as they look ahead to game five, if Chara is out, if Grzelcyk is out, they're going to activate 7D, Jurovacainen. 18th overall pick a couple of years ago, probably going to draw into the lineup with Steve Camford. They'll go 7D because, hell, they're losing one a night anyway and having to play with five, which is really catching up to them. So if David Backes is out there just getting 9 minutes, might as well just go with 11 forwards, double shift someone on Krejci's line because that's become your fourth line. And away you go. To me, I don't know. Can you give Charlie Coyle and Marcus Johansson someone else other than Heinen? Is it really just about that pair, or is it about the threesome?
No, it's about those two. It's never about Heinen. It's not about him when he goes up on the first line either. The only thing I can say that I have noticed, and I've noticed it during these playoffs, Heinen is conscientious about getting back in his own zone. He does do that, which is why they like him, right? But watch him in the offensive zone, particularly in this series. Oh, they breathe on him and he moves. I mean, he just can't hold up to this.
So, you know, I just look at the ice time now. Krejci got 16 minutes. Charlie Coyle got 15. I don't think that's right. I think that should be flipped. I think Coyle should be out there more than Krejci. He has been for most of the playoffs. How did that come to be last night?
Okay, well, I was going to say, what were the even strength numbers?
Even strength, 13.51 for David Krejci, 13.22 for Charlie Coyle. Still a little bit more for Krejci. I just think Charlie Coyle should be out there more. I think he's your second best player right now, or second best center. You know what I mean? Like, that's the second line. That's been the most consistent offensive line. And, you know, again, if you're going to go with 11-4, time to start shortening the bench. Should be a three-line team. Should be the Bergeron line, the Coyle line, the Corrali line. And then Krejci sort of fitted in there. Krejci was laying off a contact last night as bad as anyone. So I don't know why he, you know, I don't think he earns his time. I don't think he has earned the time right now. So there's another little thought for you. Back to your phones on whatever you like. Here's Michael and Methuen. Go ahead, Michael.
Hey, yeah, I was just wanted to bring this up. I mean, I think this is a coin flip going into the last three games, but the Bruins had that long layoff before game one. They played a pretty good game in game one, and they also played their other best game in game three. They had an extra day in between. The St. Louis Blues have won the two games where they've had the one day rest in between. Is it an advantage to the Bruins going forward in the next three games because you got that extra day's rest for the you have the 2 days in between?
Well, sure, let me just stop you. For the health, yes, sure. But I don't think that's why. I don't think the rest is why you won games one and three. I think you won games one and three because this has been a push pull, and those were your pushes, and the games two and four were the pulls. I think there were more penalties in games one and game three, which plays to your special teams advantage. And in games two and four, the other team needed it more and played like it. I think those are by far the driving factors, and rest has been a side piece.
I'll tell you what, though. The Bruins catch a break. You get 2 days off now before every game the rest of the way.
And I think that does help them.
Yeah. So I don't know if it's an advantage.
Because they've gotten more banged up than the other side now.
Yeah. So I don't know if I call it an advantage like the caller suggested, but I think given their physical state, it helps.
Mark and Saugus, your thoughts. Hello, Mark.
Oh, how you doing?
Good, man. You're on the air.
I just want to touch upon the that line change thing. It was a good point. Like, my kid's Pee Wee team makes better line changes than that I've seen all year. But the Chara thing, I think this is the best thing that could have happened for them. I mean, just to me, he's useless, and everybody wants to say, well, the plus minus, that doesn't matter. You can, you know, I don't know. It matters to a certain degree, but I don't think it's like everybody makes it out to be around here, because it just gets my blood boiling with Chara. Between all the delay of game penalties and the turnovers, I just feel like he's a cone. Like, the only thing he's done good, I feel, was like mold McAvoy last year in the playoffs and stuff like that.
Okay, but, Mark. You know, the plus, he's a plus 12, I think, in the postseason.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
So, but again, is that him or is that McAvoy?
Well, it's partly him. You're not better off without him.
I don't think so either. But, you know, I mean, for the people who, what was it, game four of the Carolina series, right?
Mm-hmm.
For the people who thought that they looked good that night, now they had Grzelcyk in the lineup too that night. They don't have him either. So that's a factor as well. But I don't know. I'm not telling you I believe it either, because I don't. But are they as bad off as we think they are?
Probably not. If Steve Kampfer gets a lot of minutes, they are. I mean, you don't want to see Zdeno Chara out there? Do you want to see Steve Kampfer? I'm interested in seeing Juro Vaakanainen. 18th overall pick. He's on the come. Hot prospect. Like, that interests me. But would you rather have 20-year-old Juro Vaakanainen in his first postseason game in the NHL or Zdeno Chara out there?
Chara.
So, like, let's not get stupid about this, shall we? George in the car. Go ahead, George.
Hey, Maz. You know who called Tom Brady Tom Terrific?
Who?
Gil Santos. Also, I don't know, nor do I care, who Tom Seaver is, because I'm not an old fart who watches a 1950s sport.
60s.
And 70s. Jonah in Abington. Hi, Jonah.
Hey, how's it going? On the subject of Tom Seaver, you referenced, you know, how many people, the Mets fans, Tom Brady lost when he did this. Maz can remember when Tom Brady got traded from the Mets to the Reds, how huge it was. Everybody loved that guy.
So what are you saying? When Seaver got traded to the Reds?
When Seaver got traded, he's one of those, it's almost like stealthy how popular he was. And people are going to start hearing about this and going, I don't know.
Okay, John. See, the problem is the people
who do care sound like that.
The average age of the person who cares is on oxygen tanks. So that's sort of a problem you're going to run into with your take there, Miss.
Well, except for, no, I'm just telling you, George before was a Brady fan. I think the Brady fans might get a little worked up about it.
Oh, no, definitely worked up about it.
Yeah, but then none of them know who Tom Seaver is. That's the problem. I'm just telling you again, I look at it, I think Brady comes off bad. That's all. If a guy like Boomer Esiason can sit there and tell you that he's disgusted by the fact that, as you put it, Tom Brady is going for every last crumb on the table, then I don't know that how that does Brady more good than harm.
To me, the worst that he's done is the concussion water, because I think
that's like negligent.
Yeah, that puts some people's health at risk. Yeah. Like that's like, you know, we've had NFL players, Ted Johnson, you know, people who've. You know, like, there's real consequences there.
Sure.
You know, promoting the fact that you can protect people when there's no science behind it, and you probably can't, based on the, you know, based on the science and based on the FTC shutting you down twice. Right? Like, that stuff I find disgusting. That stuff, you know, all the adjectives Esiason used, I would say for the concussion water. Not for the Tom Terrific t-shirt.
Yeah, I'm just trying to, I don't know that I would use the word disgusting or reckless. I just say it comes off as selfish and out of touch.
Well, we all know how maniacal and competitive he is. Who's the breadwinner in that house? If we really looked at it?
The G?
Super G?
Yeah. So I wonder if that's starting to chap his ass a little bit.
So he's mad that his wife makes more money than him? Mm-hmm. Is that the deal?
Okay, you have to sell a hell of a lot of t-shirts, though, to catch up by my math. We will reset our top Bruins thoughts right after Murray's 90-second update. No commercials.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.